The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. For some, the words Viva Fiesta means look out for drunk drivers. As the city celebrates, all of those partygoers raise the risk of alcohol-related crashes. And also, local law enforcement is out in force arresting suspected drunk drivers. But is this enough? There have been at least 7 deaths in Bexar County caused by intoxicated drivers since January 1st. That's twice the number of people killed in DWI crashes when compared to the same time frame last year. So why do so many people continue to drive under the influence despite the obvious risk? The risk to their own financial well-being, the risk of hurting others and maybe even killing themselves. Why do people do it, and what can we do as a community to get them to reconsider and decide to take another option to get home? Lots of ways for you to get this into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We really want to hear your stories, particularly if you've been impacted by a DWI in your life. Your story could help other people reconsider their events, how they do things, and maybe keep them off the road. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour with Abigail Moore, the CEO of the San Antonio Council on Alcohol and Drug Awareness. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you.
And Jackie Epina is the program specialist with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MAD, the South Texas chapter. And Jackie, welcome.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and start off with a voicemail. We have a voicemail, and this kind of tells a story.
About 20 years ago, my uncle took his 2 sons and his nephew on a hunting trip for the day to Seguin, and on the way back, he got into a terrible accident because he had been drinking all day long, and this resulted in him ending up in the hospital with a traumatic brain injury, his 2 sons having minor injuries, and his nephew was killed on impact. And the impact it left on my family was irreparable. My family pretty much fractured in two, and there was one side of the family and the other side of the family, and it's been like that ever since. So the effects of drinking and driving are monumental, and they don't just affect the 2 people in the cars.
So I'm going to go to one of our guests, Abigail Moore, CEO of the San Antonio Council on Alcohol and Drug Awareness. Can you talk about your reaction to that call?
Unfortunately, those are very similar stories that we hear often through our agency and our many partners that we partner with here in San Antonio. Stories like that happen weekly, daily in our community. Not only do we read about it, but we also end up having to work with some of the victims and even some of the individuals that chose to drink and drive.
And Jackie Epina.
Well, it's unfortunate that happened, and that was, she said, 20 years ago. And like Abby said, it's something that happens daily. I mean, we see the news, and it's unfortunate that these things happen. And just something that we also want people to know, it's not an accident, it's a crash, because they chose to get behind the wheel, and it's something that could have been prevented and avoided.
So let's talk about numbers here in San Antonio. How bad is it that we have, how severe is the issue? Abigail Moore.
For the last 2 to 3 years, we see in the 6,000s of DWI arrest here in Bexar County. And repeat offenders, we're talking individuals that are on their 2nd or 3rd DWI, you're at 800 to 900 per year. So the numbers continue to grow. And even though there are options, for example, share ride, calling a taxi, asking for a designated driver, or making the decision to only drink at home. There are many, many options. But unfortunately, our numbers continue to stay in the 6,000s. 68,000 for 2017. Jackie's got the numbers from 18
What are the numbers?
So last year, in 2018, we had 6,096 total arrests. So whether it was first, second, third, driving with an open can, double the legal limit, driving with a child under the age of 15, a lot of people don't know that even if it's your first DWI, if you have a child under the age of 15, it'll be an automatic felony. So you're not only endangering yourself, you're endangering your children.
So what are the consequences, just the legal consequences, first off, if you are busted for DWI? Abigail Moore, what are you facing?
Well, first offense, of course, there's an arrest, and then they have to get bailed out. Usually they hire an attorney. They have to either end up on probation or, you know, end up having fines and fees. Sometimes they might end up with a interlock in their vehicle, a machine that they have to breathe into every time they turn the car on.
Which they have to pay for.
Right, on a monthly basis. And then they have to take a DWI class, which is required for them to get their license back. And we teach that class there at our organization at Cicada. And unfortunately, we see people that are hardworking people that, are law-abiding citizens that pay their bills, that work hard, but make bad decisions. And, second and third offenses, cost you $10,000, $15,000, $20,000.
And I understand that if you get arrested for DWI, there is an automatic suspension of your driver's license?
Correct.
So what does that mean?
In order to obtain their driver's license back, they do have to take the DWI class. They have to pay extra fines and fees, and then their insurance is going to go up because they have to report that they've gotten a DWI.
Is that enough? Jackie Ipina, can you talk about those consequences? Is that enough?
I mean, we also need to educate the public. I mean, it's not just after the fact. We have to educate what happens before. You know, bringing awareness, letting people know that they need to be safe. They need to plan ahead. So they need to realize everything that can happen before their first arrest. We don't want it to get to that point that they hurt themselves or that they kill someone.
But people are making a decision. I mean, they have to make an active decision to drink and drive, particularly now, since we do have options with Uber and Lyft and cabs and other ways to get home. Everyone has a cell phone these days. You can call a friend or someone to get you. So you really kind of have to, you know, it's more of a decision now than ever to drink and drive. And people, if they knew precisely what the consequences were that they would continue to do what they're doing, is it lack of awareness what could happen to them?
We just wish that people would plan before they go and consume alcohol, where they go to different social events, because more than likely they're going to drink more than one or two drinks. And based on their weight, based on their frame, the blood alcohol concentration varies. And so individuals plan, oh, I'm only going to have one or two. And then the evening turns into a five or six. And then they haven't made a plan.
Because the first thing you lose is your judgment.
Yes. Frontal lobe is impacted, the front part of your brain, which is the judgment making center.
So soon, you know, your ability to make decisions is being altered, and now you're making bad decisions, which involves let's drink more, and then
exactly.
Let's go drive, and let's go home, and then bad things happen. We're going to continue talking about drunk driving here in San Antonio. Is there a connection with Fiesta? Should there be more education about what happens, the consequences of drinking and driving? It takes a toll on everyone in our community. Call in with your questions and comments. We want to hear your story. Tim and Tiffany and Adam will get you on the air right after this break. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about drunk driving and the risk, the impact, the consequences. We want to hear your stories. Have you been in a crash because of a drunk driving? Have you been arrested for DWI? Your story could help someone else make better choices, and you can be anonymous. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Tim, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for having me. I felt compelled to just give you a brief little story in that no one has to experience or go through what I went through. I'm a former Bexar County Sheriff's Deputy. Roughly about 20 years ago, I'm 50 years old, served in the military and got out the military and decided to become a young Bexar County Sheriff's Deputy and started out my young career in the jail and eventually went on to work in the area patrol after about 4 or 5 years in. And drinking one night, leaving a New Year's Eve party, I was pulled over and I admitted it. I told them who I was, and they showed absolutely no mercy, as I didn't expect them to. It was a boneheaded decision and mistake, and one that I live to regret. I was immediately booked into the Bexar County Jail, in which as soon as you open up the sliding doors, I knew everybody. They were shocked. I was embarrassed. Went before the judge, knew the judge. I was embarrassed again. As I was going through that and finally received a probated sentence in which I did community service, and all the while that was going on, the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement Standards, TCLOS back in the day, I think it's got a new name now, but back then it was TCLOS, and TCLOS revoked my peace officer's license. So after 6 years, one decision cost tens of thousands of dollars, left me jobless, and never to work in law enforcement again. Mm. Now, fast forward, I have since then worked for state government and federal government. And ironically, I almost always in the interview or process have to explain that mistaken judgment 20 years ago.
Tim, thank you so much for the call. He tells a story of how one decision impacts his life. And he's a former Bexar County deputy. Let me bring this up. It seems like it happens routinely. We see in the news a Bexar County deputy or a detention officer is being busted for DWI. It happens with SAPD officers. It happens with San Antonio professional firefighters. These are people who I know it's a tough job and it weighs on them, but also they're also example setters in our society. Abigail Moore, what do we think about that?
Well, yes, you're right. We see it in the medical field, in the nursing field, in so many professions. So no one's really left out from being at risk at putting themselves in a bad decision of drinking and driving. But you're right. Law enforcement, we trust them for safety and for protection. And so I think it's, like he said, it's frowned upon a little more, and there comes more shame with it because you know the consequences and you have to deal with the fatalities and the arrests. So, yes, we do see it, but we also promote self-care and wellness of our officers and EMS and other law enforcement because their jobs are such high-stress positions. And so wellness and self-care is really important. And screening, you know, it's important that, you know, on our website there's a screening tool that people can just do a quick questionnaire, 5 questions, to see if they're beginning to show signs of problem drinking, and resources available for them, free resources in the community.
Right, but if you're a deputy, if you're a law enforcement officer, if this happens to you, it will be on the paper. It will
get out.
It'll be on the news.
Absolutely.
You'll lose your job. You'll lose your ability to make a living as a peace officer, like we heard from Tim. So that's a pretty big consequence, and yet pop a few beers, get behind the wheel, and drive. So
frontal lobe is impacted for police officers as well, anybody that consumes alcohol.
All right, let's go to another story. This is Tiffany. Hi, Tiffany. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to share my experience. About 12 years ago, I was home for a visit after my first year of college, and my father was about to leave on a motorcycle run with some friends. Then later that evening, police are at the door letting us know that on his way home, a drunk driver went across the lane and ended up hitting him, and he passed on the scene. So that was just a complete 180 on our lives. Like, my brother and sister ended up growing up without a father. I was lucky enough to have him until I was about 17, but I saw how much it damaged the whole family structure. It turned everything around for my mother. She became a single mother of 3, pretty much, and left on her own to deal with both her raising a family as well as her own emotional trauma and trying to deal with losing a spouse. It changed so much in our lives, and I just wanted to share how it impacts a lot more than you think. It goes further. It can impact an entire life. It could leave a child growing up parentless.
And Tiffany, I'm sorry to hear this terrible story, but thank you for calling in. The driver who took your father's life, what happened to that person?
She was actually known in the community for being a drunk driver, but happened to have close contacts in the court system. So actually my mom's first court-appointed judge told her that she thought my mom should drop the case because she would impact that woman's life. And actually that's when Mothers Against Drunk Driving stepped in and got my mom an unbiased lawyer. And she was given 10 years of probation, but from what I know, she skipped out on probation, and I'm not sure if she was ever arrested.
So Tiffany, sounds like the drunk driver in your story and took your father's life didn't really have to face serious consequences.
That's really what it felt like. And she was actually had previous DWI. She had her license revoked, but her daughter ended up buying her a car in her own name and giving it to her. And that's what she was using when she took my father's life.
Tiffany, thank you so much for calling. And I'm really sorry to hear about your dad and what happened to your family. So the drunk driver and MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, you were able to help the family get a better attorney. Is that what y'all do quite a bit?
We have different services. So we have our victim advocates that work with those victim survivors that have been impacted by a drunk or drug driver. So they help them fill out crime victims compensation application, referring them to the community, counseling, court accompaniment. So we accompany them to court throughout the whole court process if there is an actual trial. Sometimes, you know, the drunk driver kills themselves as well, so there is no process there. But we also refer them to civil attorneys, and that's who can help them out with their whole situation as well. But that's what we're here for. Whether it happened yesterday, 20 years ago, Matt is there to support these victims.
Abigail Moore, what about what happens in the court system? Is it really tough enough on people who take lives and drive drunk?
Well, we believe that substance abuse disorder is a disease. It is an illness, but this illness impacts too many people. And not necessarily everybody that's drinking and driving has a substance use disorder. They might be just an abusive drinker. We believe that individuals need to be held responsible for their actions. Like Jackie was saying, we're very, we believe in prevention. How can we prevent these things? This woman caused the life of Tiffany's father, a husband. He would have been a grandpa. He's missed out, and they've missed out so much. Can you put a price tag on that?
It's the financial damage to that family.
No, and also their emotional loss is forever that they've had. That void in their life is forever. So penalties, we believe, I mean, when individuals continue to get second and third DWIs, like she said, this woman was already on several. She didn't have a driver's license anymore, and she was still driving. So I believe that individuals like that need to be behind bars.
Let's go to Adam. He's called in. Adam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was listening. I'm a fan of the show, so thanks for taking my call. And I just want to note that, you know, I've growing up in San Antonio and then kind of leaving after school and going and kind of working in a bigger market like San Francisco, and the culture there is just so different. Nobody, you know, people might have cars, but they just don't drive everywhere. I feel like in Texas, you know, the lack of, you know, public transportation, San Antonio is so big, it's so spread out. People don't have an option to jump on a train and go where they want and then get back on a train and drive back, you know, get back to their neighborhood. And when you're talking about a city that's so spread out like San Antonio, taking a lift from one side of town to the other, you know, people can't really afford to pay $30, $40 round trip to go out, you know, especially in a working class, you know, a city like ours. So anyways, that was my comment, and I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks again.
All right, Adam, thank you for the call. But we do have Lyft, and if it does cost $30 or $40 to make that trip to that event, that party, and so you can enjoy it and go home, is that really too much to ask, Abigail Moore?
No, we don't think so. I mean, that's, you know, a long time of taking some apparent, the consequence if they, let's say they don't hurt anybody else. It's going to cost them $10,000 if they're arrested. So $35 for a Lyft versus the $10,000 of the penalties and fees and the insurance increase and attorney's fees that they are going to have to pay for that first DWI.
And Jackie Epina with MAD, there are like specials and things available for Lyft during Fiesta?
Yeah, I know that during special events, there are certain codes that Lyft, Uber will give out. I know too, every so often, either rideshare company sends me like 10% off your next six rides, but you need to take advantage of that. I mean, if you can't afford a $30 to $4 round trip ride to an event you're going, then maybe you shouldn't be going to that event in the first place.
Or you shouldn't be drinking.
Yeah. So, I mean, but like Abby said, it's cheaper to pay for that ride share than take someone's life, take your own life, hurt someone. But then I agree with Adam too. We don't have, we're a big city and we don't have that public transportation. And it's something that Texas doesn't have, but other cities.
If you think about it, if you share a share ride with three or four other friends, that's only $10,
right? And so, Adam did mention that in other cities, it seems to be a different sort of cultural vibe. Does San Antonio, is it not as tough on drunk driving as other communities? I mean, is there a way to judge that, Abigail Moore?
Well, we believe that we have really strict laws here in the state of Texas for drinking and driving compared to other states. You know, now all states require everybody to be 21 years of age before they can consume alcohol. Underage drinking is a big issue amongst these numbers as well. We're really proud of our city of San Antonio for passing the social host ordinance a couple of years ago to hold adults that provide alcohol to minors responsible. And that was passed unanimously with our city council. So we are a city that is very active in the police department, the DWI task force. We are both parts, our organizations are part of the DWI task force, always looking for opportunities to keep our city safe.
But email from Charles, are there unique cultural norms in South Texas that make this a particular problem? Jackie Epina, I mean, Fiesta, come on, this is like all about drinking beer and meat on a stick. I mean, this is what this is all about, right?
Well, I mean, it's about, you know, party with a purpose, but you also need to party with a pass, which is the person appointed to stay sober. So again, it's not that person that's had the least amount to drink, but the person that has had no alcohol at all. But like we were talking about earlier, there's always an event. So we just need to make sure that we plan ahead. Something that I say, just the way that you plan your perfect outfit, you need to plan your way, your perfect way on getting home.
So when you said party with a purpose, that's the catchphrase we hear about Fiesta, because so many San Antonio nonprofits use Fiesta as a big fundraiser for their ability to do their good works. It seems like, though, that's why there is this willingness to sort of like turn a blind eye towards all the alcohol that's consumed during Fiesta, because there's a lot of pressure because we're raising money for a good cause, you know? So is that happening, Abigail Moore?
That's unacceptable. You know, we continue to take the message about prevention, and we work with TABC, Texas Alcohol and Beverage Commission, to make sure that individuals aren't being overserved, but that's not enough.
Right. Is this a law enforcement issue? There are plenty of officers on the road right now during the DWI task force during Fiesta. They're working at their maximum, but is it enough? Is it going to take community sanctions against individuals to help get the message out there, don't drink and drive? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Drunk driving is an issue year-round, but here we are in Fiesta, and maybe this is an opportunity to put a spotlight on an issue that's always a tragic event happening in the streets of San Antonio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, not to just to put down on Fiesta, but you know, are we doing enough as a community year-round to emphasize the fact that drinking and driving is not acceptable? We should not tolerate it with our friends and our community. People lose their jobs over this and they lose their career over it. Is that enough? Or is there some sort of unspoken code that says, well, that's okay, everyone does it, so I'll get away with it too? How can we really break through the unspoken stuff that's going on about drinking and driving in San Antonio, really get to the heart of it and make some changes? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Mo. And Mo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you taking my call. Hey, real quick, I wanted to respond to a caller that was came through just a couple of minutes ago. Lived in the Bay Area for about 30 years, moved to San Antonio in 2004. From my perspective, it's not a matter of how big the city is. It's not a matter about how costly rideshare is. It comes down to a person's ability or willingness to take responsibility for their own actions. It's their own judgments that affect other people. So you got me to get off the couch and dial the number, because it's none of that. It just comes down to the individual and making sure that they're responsible for their actions.
Mo, thank you so much for the call. I'm going to go straight to Santa. Santa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a point. I was listening earlier on, and one of the things that I try to do as a parent with young adults who, you know, do drink, is to always encourage them to do the Uber and the Lyft. They have that down packed. So I think it's, as parents, we need to strongly tell our kids you shouldn't drive, you should Uber. And like previously mentioned, it is sort of expensive, but when you do it with friends, nobody, you know, goes to anything by themselves usually, you split the cost. The other thing I wanted to just comment on was, I know as an adult person that, you know, you shouldn't drink and drive because you may get arrested and get a DWI. But one of your guest speakers, and I don't remember who it was, she actually outlined the consequences, what you would go through in the event that you are stopped and you get a DWI. And that, to me, after hearing all of that, is like, that is such a huge hassle. Who wants all of that? So I know that as a layperson, Fiesta does bring about more drinking and driving, sadly, right? It does. But I would highly encourage, you know, like Mad Mothers, to put out these plastic poster boards with just these bullet points of these are the consequences of.
All right, Sansa, thank you so much for the call. So she highlights the point that we heard earlier from Abigail Moore. You walked us through just some of the things. There's more that will happen to a person if you get arrested for the first time with a DWI. Do people know that? And if they knew that they would make better choices? Let me get answers from both of you, but first, Abigail.
I think that because, like one of the callers had said, there's so much shame when someone gets a DWI. They don't talk about it. They don't share it with their family. And so they try to keep it to themselves as much as they can. And so they don't. It's not, the information is not out there as much as it should be. And part of our jobs, we like to talk about the consequence. Let's avoid these consequences, not only about taking someone's life or hurting yourself or injuring someone else's safety in our city, but the consequence of the cost and then the shame and guilt and even losing your career.
And but Jackie Epina with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, if people knew precisely that if they got arrested and there was a pretty good chance that they could get arrested, that then they would make, you know, better choices. How is this not being connected?
I just think that
they just think they're going to get away with it.
They think they're going to get away with it. Or like you said, sometimes people's definition of intoxication is different. So sometimes they might think that they're not intoxicated, but they are. And intoxication doesn't necessarily mean that 0.08 level, because it could just be losing any physical or mental faculty. It could be introducing a drug, whether it's legal or illegal, into your body as well.
Okay, well, let's talk about how many beers a person can drink and still not be a drunk driving? As in, so Abigail Moore, what's that calculation?
Well, I really don't like to throw a whole lot of numbers out because an individual said, well, you know, the lady on the phone said I can have 2.5 in 1 hour and not be legally intoxicated. By person's weight and height, and again, if somebody has been consuming a lot of alcohol over time, they build tolerance, and that's part of the addiction. And when they build tolerance, they consume a lot of alcohol and appear to be walking okay, but their cognitive and physical impairment is already there. But they are able to navigate, you know, and not walk, fall down the stairs as often as other people because they've built a tolerance. So for a female, it's said that more than 2.5 drinks in a one-time sitting is considered binge drinking, and or you can put your blood alcohol concentration, if you're a female of about 140 pounds, 2.5 drinks can put you at 0.08 pretty quickly.
2.5 drinks mm-hmm. over how long?
An hour and a half, about a little over an hour for a female. And for a male, it's 4 drinks. And so but it also depends on their weight and their height, the amount of body fat, because alcohol is fat soluble. And so the way it stores can increase somebody's concentration faster.
But it still seems like drinking 4 beers in an hour, and that's.
But if you think about it, how many times are they taking shots in between there? And
shots.
Then right, and you know, a shot here in Texas, unfortunately, is not the average size. It's a much bigger size. So it's how they consume and how often they consume. And like Jackie was saying, is there already other drugs in their system? And your liver processes alcohol differently based on how much you've consumed in the past. So somebody that consumes alcohol for a long time, their liver takes longer.
Are people really drinking that much?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And it takes 1 hour to process. And it takes 1 hour to process one drink.
One drink.
Okay. So. Right. Let's go to Anthony. Anthony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. How are you doing? Thank you so much for taking my phone call. I wanted to add a comment regarding the whole issue of drinking and driving. I'm 39, and so when I grew up in the 80s, I was surrounded by this culture of, you know, the older males, you know, consuming alcoholic beverages. And not only that, the city, San Antonio, wasn't as dense as it is, so driving was something that had to occur. And, of course, the people, are they going to drink, and then they're going to drive. And so it's kind of like set into this culture. And so we have this next generation of people that are growing up. And me, I'm a bartender. I've been bartending for 7 years. So, you know, I see this next generation that's coming up. And they see that, you know, they see their elders doing this. So they kind of think it's okay and they do it themselves. But also to agree and to add to your speaker's comments regarding blood alcohol consumption, me being a bartender for 7 years, it's my responsibility to properly serve a guest. And a lot of the times, because our city is based on a service industry, and a lot of the times my servers who are serving the guests, they complain because they say, hey man, just pour them the drink, just give me the drink. And I say, your guest has already consumed 2 to 3 beverages within an hour, and you need a manager, or you need to make an educated guest and say, hey, I need to stop serving you, right, or slow them down or something, because to them, it affects their tip.
Okay, Anthony, thanks for the call. Bartenders and the role that they play in this situation, what are their responsibilities? Abigail Moore.
They receive training on how to stop and how to identify somebody that's been that's under the influence. But often, because of the environment, there's so much drinking, they'll get another bartender or another staff member to get them a drink. They'll get another family member to get them a drink. They'll go to the next bar to get a drink, and or sometimes they've already come under the influence even before they enter a bar. So it's really hard for the industry to be responsible for individuals. It's back to that individual and to their peers and their friends that are with them.
Now another caller. This is Marcus. Hi, Marcus. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. You know, we talk about responsibility. Whose responsibility? Is it the bartender, or is it the person consuming, or even is it the event itself? I believe that it should be all three. You know, every person should take an aspect of responsibility. And, like, I have an idea that like maybe these chess events should have breathalyzer booths, you know, where it could be decorated really fun-like and, you know, encourage people just to come and sit down and take a breathalyzer and just, you know, understand where you are. And that way your friends can be aware. Maybe the designated driver could be aware that maybe this individual is maybe you're having too much.
Okay.
I think, again, the responsibility should be shared and the education should be shared as well.
Okay, good idea. Marcus, thank you for that. Jackie Epina from MAD, breathalyzer booths. We've seen in bars they have breathalyzer machines and actually people get in competition to see who actually can blow the highest. You're nodding your head, Abigail Moore.
Exactly, exactly. When somebody's frontal lobe is impacted and you have a breathalyzer machine there, it turns into a competition. How much and what's yours at? And let me drink more. And I understand the idea and the gentleman's idea if there wasn't the impact of the frontal lobe being impacted and then the environment of heavy consumption and the competition and just the what goes on with that, it would work if alcohol wasn't a part of it.
In February, a drunk driver crashed into a shopping cart in a parking lot, killing one-year-old Koriana Tovar, who was sitting in the cart's seat with her as her mother was unloading groceries. Terrible story. There's so many stories like that here in San Antonio. Drivers who get behind the wheel after drinking too much. What can we do to reduce the number of drunk drivers in San Antonio, make our streets safer, because it's taking the lives of the innocent? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about drunk driving during Fiesta and year-round. What can be done here locally to get people to understand that they should not be driving while under the influence? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. What can we do as a community to no longer tolerate this and make drunk driving a thing of the past? Got an email from Justin. Drivers who are residents in San Antonio or any incorporated cities and found to have been drunk driving, they should get their license revoked, full stop. Is that an option? Is that something that can be done? Abigail Moore, they're suspended.
But people are still driving.
Yeah, in Texas, I saw a statistic. It's like 1 out of 10 drivers in Texas has a suspended driver's license. It's the worst in Texas than any other state in the country.
Right. Well, like Tiffany said, the drunk driver that killed her father, her license had already been suspended. She was on her third or fourth DWI. How do you prevent people from driving? They drive somebody else's car. They take somebody else's keys. Because driving gives us independence, and they want to still continue to have that independence.
There was a story of a breathalyzer put in a car. He had to blow into it to start the car. The driver would bring his kid with him to go out drinking and have his kid blow into the breathalyzer. And then they crashed and the child died. So, you know, they're always going to find a workaround.
Well, I think that the breathalyzer machines are changing now that you're having to put your fingerprint in there as well. And so there's other ways that those machines are beginning to catch
more
those
sophisticated
things.
Yes.
And now they have cameras as well. So they're monitoring who is actually blowing into that ignition interlock.
It's crazy. It's got to get that complicated in order to make these things effective. Back to the phones with Barry. Hi, Barry. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, sir. I wake up in the morning and watch the news, and it breaks my heart when I see a story about some drunk driver killing a mom on her way to school with the kids, and this turns out to be his fourth or fifth DWI. Where's the problem lie besides him? Besides the bar serving them too much, I think even though they might be have immunity, I think the judges should be held responsible after they've let the guy go after the first time. Nobody should have a second strike, you're out. You should just be put away.
All right, Barry, thank you for that. Judges can be held accountable by voters. Abigail, I'm going to go to Jackie Ipina with the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Do y'all track judges and how they are doing in sentencing people, holding them accountable?
Well, with MAD, I monitor DWI cases here in Bexar County and Comal County, but I only monitor your misdemeanor cases, which is your first or second. Now your third, fourth, or more, those are felony courts right now. Usually our victim advocates are there with families, but we do monitor that. We do enter it in a database, and then a court monitoring report is released in all of Texas. So how many cases are being dismissed? Are they being put on probation? What are the conditions? And it breaks it down for you. So we do keep track of that data.
And then make it available to
the
public?
We do make it available. It is made available to the public if they go to our website, madd.org. There is our court monitoring report, and they could see it on there.
All right, let's go to Justin. Hi, Justin. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. I had a quick question about the 0.08 actual limit. We know these are actually, you know, the breathalyzer is often fought in court. I'm curious as to whether there's something other, there's another measurement legally that we can use, and whether the 0.08 is a deterrence, or maybe even it's something that's saying, well, I'm going to be 0.08 anyway, I might as well drink a whole bunch more than that.
Okay, interesting point. Abigail Moore, 0.08. Some states are lower than that, right?
Right. I don't think that individuals, once they're consuming, because they can't really monitor their own BAC level as they're drinking, you know, do they say, oh, well, I've already reached it, I'm just going to keep going. You know, I don't know that those kind of thoughts are even going through their mind, except having a good time, being with their friends and partying. We do know that in Bexar County that blood draws are used, and we monitor the blood draw content, blood alcohol concentration content when a person receives a blood draw. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is those numbers are really, really high. Sometimes it's double the legal intoxication level.
Because a lawyer can fight the breathalyzer. Mm-hmm. They know all the tricks.
Right.
Got an email from a listener. I am interested in many events throughout the city. However, I do not participate for the fear of drunk drivers. Even a sweet celebration at a local park during Easter Sunday because of the stress, because of people who celebrate by drinking excessively. I have three teenage drivers and I have to force myself not to worry about drunk drivers on the road. This is exhausting. People think they're just having fun, but they have to drink, and the roads get dangerous. There are a lot of people out there who just do not go out at night because they're afraid of death, to death of drunk drivers. And I think these people make a lot of sense. Jackie Pena, I mean, you deal with these people all the time, people who are drunk driving. And with Mothers Against Driving, how does that impact your driving habits?
So, I mean, drunk driving does not discriminate what day of the week it is or what time of day. Your deadliest time will be 2 to 2:59 a.m. So if I'm going somewhere...
Wait, say it again.
Your deadliest time of the day is 2 a.m. to 2:59 a.m. So that's the time... After the bar's closed.
Okay.
So it impacts me by, if I'm going to go out, you know, I'm going to try to leave way before that, or sometimes I'll just wait it out at wherever I'm at. But I usually will leave way before the last call.
But unfortunately, that's not the only bad time. Mm-hmm. As you read about that little one-year-old that was killed in the afternoon, her mom was loading groceries and the baby was in the shopping cart. Like Jackie said, it doesn't discriminate. It could be at any time during the day. It doesn't have to be a holiday. It doesn't have to be a weekend. That was during the week. That was in an afternoon.
But how unfair is it that law-abiding people, drivers, are terrorized, they're afraid to go out onto the streets because of drunk drivers who, it's story after story that we've heard this hour about a drunk driver that has taken the life of someone that they love. And they said, well, the only way I can protect myself against them, because we allow this to happen in our community, is to not drive during at dark, when it gets dark.
That, and as communities, we believe that we can do things like social media campaigns. We are not okay with this, and we will not be all right with individuals drinking and driving, just like seatbelt laws. Think about it. 30 years ago, nobody was wearing their seatbelts, and now no one leaves home without their seatbelt.
I got a couple of tickets for not driving with my seatbelt on, so now I drive with the seatbelt on.
I bet you do.
You know, so I think enforcement has a lot to do with it.
Exactly. So if we can, as a community, change the social norms, how we believe about this, and really shun, I don't want to say shun, but really make it not okay to drink and drive, and continue to voice that as a community, and to stand up against individuals that drink and drive.
So how do we address this as a friend or a family member? We don't want the confrontation and they'll say, hey, man, it's not like you don't drink too. And, you know, it gets all personal and stuff. And I got to say, man, you got a problem. You can't be drinking and driving. I mean, how do I get there? Any clues, any tips? Jackie, how do you confront somebody?
I mean, I know that you don't want to, but, you know, taking away those keys or offering to drive them home, paying for an Uber. I mean, it's okay to leave your vehicle behind. It's like, it's better that you get towed than for you to kill yourself, kill someone, hurt someone. And that impact is much more devastating.
I'm going to get Linda. She's called in. Linda, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So speaking about the social media campaign or whatever you're talking about, maybe adding the person's name and what they were caught doing, you know, the amount of alcohol they had in them, and maybe create like a sort of a area where everybody can see what each person did. And maybe that would make people not want to drink and drive. But also, if we want to change our societal norms, I think that we need to start in the high schools and add a curriculum that's just real forceful to teach the kids, to teach this age, you know, that the dangers with their health as well as, you know, the consequences of drinking and driving.
All right, Linda, thank you for that. And so, Mad, you do have programs that go into schools.
Yes, Mad does have programs for youth and parents. So our youth program is called Power of Youth. So middle and high school and even university. So they're still underage kids in college. And for parents, grandparents, caretakers, it's called Power of Parents. I do provide those presentations. I do train people to do those presentations. And I provide them in English and Spanish. So I even did a presentation for elementary last week. So,
and what are those kids? How do they receive that?
Well, I got a lot of questions, but if a six-year-old can tell me, one of the questions I asked them was like, do you know how many people die because of drunk driving? His response was like, well, it's not zero. And I was like, that's the perfect answer because we want, you know, our thing with Matt is zero victims. So if a six-year-old can see that, why can't an adult see that?
Abigail Moore, you're with the San Antonio Council on Alcohol and Drug Awareness, and you look at alcohol dependency as a disease. How do we weigh that as well as try to talk about drunk driving and putting drunk drivers behind bars and locking them up?
Right. A disease is something that is curable. People can get help for, and there's resources and recovery is possible. However, drinking and driving is a crime. Very different the two things.
So you're not locking them up because they're an alcoholic. You're locking them up. You want them put away or have some sort of consequences because
they committed a crime.
They committed a crime.
Exactly.
And a crime that could or has or does endanger the lives of the people around them that have nothing to do with drinking and driving.
Absolutely. So we see, yes, this is a disease, but you're committing a crime. And we believe in recovery. Recovery is possible. But drinking and driving, like Jackie said, is not an accident. Those are crimes. Those are fatalities. And those are not accidents. Those are wrecks and taking someone's life.
So don't call them an accident.
No.
And so, Jackie, that's one of the big things that Mad says.
Yeah, because an accident is something that is unavoidable.
That happened.
Yeah. So, but you're choosing to get behind the wheel. You're choosing to drive, and you're making that ill-fated decision.
Jackie Ipina is a program specialist with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MAD, the South Texas chapter. Abigail Moore is the CEO of the San Antonio Council on Alcohol and Drug Awareness. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.